time to talk about local food, and specifically today as it relates to deer. And Jo Ann Weaver is a Crow Wing County Master Gardener, and she's one of the presenters at Back to Basics this Saturday, February 11th at Pine River Becca School. She's given two workshops, tomatoes, seed to saucepan, and no deer, not my garden tonight. And Joanne is joining us now. Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
Joanne, before we get to these topics, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got interested in gardening.
Well, I grew up in a gardening family in Nebraska. And when we moved up here full time, which was back in the year 2000, I can recall one of the nursery owners said to me, "Oh, you're going to be so lucky. You have lots of sunshine up there." What he didn't tell me was that everything I planted, for the most part, would be in sand. So I had a whole new challenge ahead of me. But it's been a great experience. I love to garden. And as I said, I've done gardening things most of my life. And there are always new adventures, and as some of the garden writers say, you know, one thing about gardeners, they're always hopeful. They start out the next year thinking, okay, this is going to be better, so there you go.
You know, you grew up with gardening, and now you're a master gardener, and you're giving us some workshops, and the seed catalogs are out, and it's time to get our gardens in. How much harder is it? Let's start with tomatoes. How much harder is it to start tomatoes from seed than to just buy the plants from a greenhouse?
Well, it's actually not that difficult at all. One of the things that starting from seed will allow you to do is you have more choice. You can, there are all kinds of catalogs out there, and you can pick something that suits you. Now, I live in Crow Wing County, and that means that I'm in a zone 3B, and the last frost date is going to be around May 27th, and the first frost date is going to be somewhere around mid to the end of September. So on average, I'm going to have about 115 growing days, and when I start looking for either plants in a greenhouse, and of course, remember, the vendors are going to sell, they're going to bring in what they can sell, so they're going to have tried and true for the most part, and it's not always possible for them to branch out and try these different odd, you know, varieties. Whereas if you start seed, you can choose something that suits you. Look for the phrase days to maturity, because if you pick out some of the heirloom plants, they will go like 110 days before they're really at any production. Well, if you live where I live, that means they're reaching peak production about the time that I have to worry about frost coming in. So I want to pick something that matures a little earlier, like, you know, 50-some days, 60 days, 70, whatever. And I can still have lots of variety in doing that. I need to remember that when I'm working with seed, I count backward from the last frost date. So if I use like May 27th or June 1st as my date, then I don't want to start those seeds until like maybe 6 weeks ahead of that. And I can start them inside. They need light and, you know, nurture them. Then I have to allow some time for them to harden off. In other words, become accustomed to the outside as opposed to the protected indoor environment. And then I can put them out in sun.
How do you harden them off?
Hardening off is an interesting thing. And whether you buy plants at a nursery or whether you're raising your own plants from seed, what you do is water them just a little bit less. Of course, you don't want them to droop over, you know, look like they're exhausted, but withdraw a little bit of water and put them outside on a nice day, but put them under a bench or in the shade. You know, do this in and out for about anywhere 5 to 6 days, and each day you're exposing them to a little more sun, gentle breezes, bring them in the first few nights so that they get this gradual exposure to the actual outdoor environment. And so around a week or so after that, and again, whether it's a greenhouse plant or whether it's something that you have grown yourself, it gives this time, the plant time to acclimatize. So that's hardening off. And once you put them in, you can't just, you know, go to the nursery, buy a plant, and stick it in the garden, which lots of us have the desire to do that because we want instant reaction. But better to give a little time and harden things off. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Good. Okay. What else can I tell you?
Well, so once we have our plants and we've hardened them off, what do you have some tips about planting them in the ground and into the garden?
I do. You know, lots of people say, well, I really, you know, I need information on tomato diseases and all the things that can go wrong. But as in life, the best thing to do is try to prevent the problems in the first place. So when it comes to tomatoes, what do you want to do? Number one, pick a spot that hopefully hasn't had tomato plants or eggplants or peppers. Any of these, they fall in the category of nightshade vegetables, but they attract the same pests, they attract the same diseases. So if you can rotate the spot in which you're planting your tomatoes and in a place where they haven't been for at least 2 or 3 years, that's to your advantage. And then this spot should be in the sun. You want to space the plants apart. You want to make sure that all the debris from, you know, any previous plantings, whatever it might be, has been cleaned up pretty well. Once you put your plants in, and again, you've, you know, hardened them off for a week or so, and you might want to pick late afternoon to plant them. Don't plant them out midday when they're going to have to start out facing the hot sun right away. Plant them later in the day if there's a little bit of, you know, what you want to do is put them in, make sure that you water them, but don't water them from above. Water them down at the base of the plant and then mulch them. Use some clean straw and that'll hold the moisture in. That'll keep the dirt from splashing up on the plant, which is a way that often disease is started. And once those plants are in and flourishing and, you know, depending upon, there are a couple choices. There are two broad categories of tomatoes, determinate and indeterminate. And determinate tomatoes are those that are predetermined to grow to a certain size. They have basically a large flush of their fruit, and then they're pretty much over with. Indeterminate goes on the whole season. They're big, sprawling plants most often. They definitely need to be supported. Indeterminate plants don't need that same support, at least not to the same degree. You want to continually, you know, go out in the garden and look at your plants, but don't do it when they're wet, because you're going to, if there's any disease, you're going to attract whatever it is, you'll take it from one plant to another. So make sure you're working in an area that's dry. And I often will take a little bucket of soapy water, not, you know, like a kid's bucket. It doesn't have to be real big, but look at your plants. Look at the underside of the leaves, and if you see some bugs or some worms, things that don't belong, just pick them off and drop them in the bucket, and that way you're preventing things from happening. You're not using any sprays or anything like that. And if you do see a problem, leaves curling, browning, you can go to the University of Minnesota Extension Garden website and find research-based information. They have great photos and hints on what to do with different diseases. There are enough that it's really hard for me to give you a rundown on those in this short conversation, but I can't tell you how good that website is, because it'll walk you right through, you know, what's wrong with my plant, and specific to tomatoes, shows you pictures. You can pretty much identify the problem and find out what you should do about it.
So, Joanne, if I was going to plant a tomato in a pot, from what you're saying, it sounds like I should choose a determinate plant for one thing. And what kind of soil should I put in a pot for a tomato?
And can I ask, that determinate or indeterminate, is that something that I can find on the label, or how do I find that piece of information out exactly?
It's right, almost, you know, it's right there on the back of the seed package.
Okay.
Regardless of where you buy your seed, the basic information that'll be on the packet is, you know, what's the variety name. It'll tell you days to maturity. It'll tell you determinate versus indeterminate. And sometimes different varieties are bred to have some disease resistance. That's not always on the seed packet. You might have to go online and look at that tomato, or go to a seed catalog and sometimes it will specifically say that, you know, this particular variety of tomatoes is resistant to this particular problem, but that's not always on the seed packet. If you want to do container tomatoes, yes, you're on the right track in saying that you should choose a determinate one, and you'll want a larger pot. You want soil in that pot that hasn't been used for the same thing in previous years. You don't want to go out in your garden or the corner of your lawn and, you know, dig into the dirt there and put that in your pot. It's better to buy some potting soil. It's going to be too dense if you use regular gardening soil, and you want to use different soil, fresh soil, every year. Do not put, a lot of people say, well, you know, they'll say the bigger the pot, the better the tomato will grow. And, you know, some people think, well, I'll just fool Mother Nature a little bit and I'll put some styrofoam peanuts or rocks in the bottom, things that'll fill up the bottom part of the pot, and put the dirt over that. But it's better not to do that. I mean, fill the whole thing with good garden soil that you have purchased, and or else you can mix it yourself and you have to do some amendments to that. But anyway, better to do that than to try to fill up the bottom of the pot. The pot definitely needs drainage. And, you know, if it's a big pot, a lot of people like to do tomatoes on their deck, which is a great. Clay pots are beautiful. Sometimes they're a little bit heavier, so you might want to choose, you know, a plastic pot. But whatever kind you choose, make sure it has drainage in the bottom. Very possible to raise tomatoes in containers. And, you know, the smaller the tomato, they're one of my favorites. I have a lot of favorites, but Sun Sugar is one. I don't see Sun Gold so often anymore in the nurseries. I see Sun Gold or Sun Sugar more often, but it's supposed to have one of the highest sugar concentrations, and the littler tomatoes will bring in, they'll be sweeter than the bigger tomatoes because they concentrate that sugar. And, you know, it's real easy to plant a variety, walk through the garden, you know, pick a handful of small tomatoes, and you can barely get them to the house. They taste so good.
Yeah, and kids just love them. We are talking with Joanne Weaver, Crow Wing County Master Gardener, and one of the presenters at Back to Basics this Saturday. Let's move on to deer, which I would say are wicked, wicked creatures. There's nothing worse than thinking about those deer ripping up my carrots or obliterating the kale. How do we begin to cope with them?
Well, it is a challenge. I will say that. I envy people. And, you know, living in the city does not always mean you are immune. Deer walk around everywhere, particularly in a state like Minnesota. I think we're in the 10 most highly deer-populated states, I believe. But, you know, what do you do? Okay. First of all, if you have the opportunity to put up a fence, that's a good thing, particularly around a vegetable garden. I have a fence around my vegetable garden. Around my house, I don't have a fence. But one of the things that you can do, and, you know, there's a whole list of things, but, okay, exclusion tactics, that's basically fencing. You can actually use high-test fishing line and put in very slim, those green plastic, you know, they're basically about as thick as your little finger, and put in a few of those around your garden and put in either one or two rows of high-test fishing line, and the deer will, they'll walk into that. Now, they can break through it very easily, but actually not that easily, but they walk up to it, they touch it, they don't know what it is, they don't see it very well, and that will often provide some protection. Deer are very smart. Whatever you do, you can't do just one thing and think that that's going to work. I mean, even, you know, I always tell my husband, we don't have a dog, but we should have a dog. But if we do or did, we would not be able to just say, you know, we'll put the collar on the dog and make sure they stay in one place, because the deer get used to that. I mean, they just stay far enough out that the dog isn't bothering them, whereas if your dog has the run of the place, maybe because you have the electronic collar on the, you know, the dog and the fence, so they don't, they know they don't go over it, and it has free run of your yard, then the deer know that the dog can come up to them. So that's one thing. A lot of people will use sprays, and sprays are only as good as the person who's spraying, because if you don't discipline yourself to do it, then the deer are soon going to find out that, oh, you know, this didn't taste so good last week, but this week it's fine. And deer love over-fertilized and over-watered plants. I mean, they, you know, most of the time they get through the winter, and sometimes it's a tough winter. I know this winter in particular, there was not a high, you know, a large acorn crop, and so we had a lot of deer and actually some problems with mice as well in the fall, because in part it was related to the low acorn crop. But spraying things, and you can mix your own concoctions, the smell and the taste, whether it's rotten eggs or, you know, and the sulfur smell, there are products out there that rely on hot peppers, blood meal, you know, there are all kinds of things. But again, rotate whatever it is you're using. The white-tailed deer, the tail flips up when they run. That alerts everybody that there's danger. So that tail is a sign. A lot of people will tie little white strips of rag in the trees around their garden. Other people will go to the hairdresser and get, you know, the hair that's swept up off the floor. You want hair that smells like people. You don't want clean shampooed hair. You want, you know, hair that's, and dog clippings too, if a dog's been, you know, trimmed. But you put that hair in little bags and kind of put it around wherever whatever you're trying to protect, but that has to be changed rather frequently. Some people swear that, you know, certain soaps hung in trees will deter the deer. You would have to have a huge supply of soap to make that work for a very long time. And, you know, a lot of people will use predator urine and put that around their garden. But as one friend said long ago, you know, if you have white rags in the trees, hair scattered around, I mean, finally it gets to the point where who wants to be in the garden, because it looks pretty bad. So you have to play the game there.
Right, and you don't want to spray those things on your vegetables either, right? That's more for your ornamentals and things like that.
That is correct. You know, whatever you apply to your garden, if all else fails, read the directions first, and that certainly applies to things that you're going to use, even if you're not going to use these products. Now, there is one product, and it comes from, and I don't have it committed to memory, a place in Wisconsin. It's mill organite, and it's an off-label use. It's a fertilizer as well as a deterrent. And it's, you know, you can put that. It says it's good for vegetables. I would never use it around vegetables, but, you know, you always read the label. That's the important thing. Know what you're dealing with, and don't make assumptions. So,
all right. Well, Joanne, thank you for visiting with us today, and we're looking forward to your presentation in Pine River.
Well, I'm looking forward. I've never done that presentation to that group before, so it should be fun, and I always learn from my audience. You know, people do different things, and sometimes you learn from them, so I'm eager to do it.
You can find out more information about Back to Basics and a list of online resources from Joanne about tomatoes and deer on our website at kaxe.org.